Welcome to the dystopian carnival that is America in 2025, where our economic reality is a fever dream of contradictions and chaos. The latest jobs report, delayed like a bad punchline waiting to land, suggests things might be marginally less awful than we feared. But let's not start popping the champagne just yet. Unless you're one of those mythical creatures who still believes in a thriving middle class, September's job numbers were higher than expected, which would be cause for celebration if it weren't for the fact that unemployment also ticked up. It's like finding out you've won a free cruise while realizing your boat is on fire. Economists are scratching their heads trying to make sense of this mess, but let's face it, clarity left town years ago. Meanwhile, President Trump's administration continues its masterclass in cognitive dissonance by ignoring the glaring affordability crisis plaguing everyday Americans. A staggering 76% of people think our economy is tanking, a sentiment echoed by empty shopping carts at Home Depot and Target, as consumers tighten their belts so much they're practically cutting off circulation. But don't worry, if you're one of those earning over $100,000 annually, Walmart has rolled out the red carpet for your spending habits while everyone else drowns in debt and despair. It's an economic landscape where luxury thrives amidst widespread struggle, a K-shaped recovery that looks more like a cruel joke than any kind of solution. And then there's AI, the shiny new toy Wall Street can't seem to figure out whether to love or loathe. Nvidia's earnings soared past expectations, temporarily reviving stock market spirits before confusion set back in because apparently even investors are lost without their GPS of greed. The Federal Reserve sits poised on the edge of indecision. Should they cut interest rates or keep them high? Either way spells doom for someone. It's just a matter of choosing which group gets thrown under the bus first. In this kaleidoscope nightmare we call an economy, personal financial situations dictate perspective. If you're secure with high pay and job stability, congratulations, you've won capitalism's lottery. For everyone else, well, better luck next time as you juggle mounting debts and elusive employment opportunities. So here we are, living through another chapter in America's ongoing saga where hope is scarce and solutions scarcer still. Until something changes, and don't hold your breath, it seems we're all condemned to watch this surreal circus unfold from our front row seats on the Titanic.
Welcome back to First World Problems, where we tackle the burning issues that keep the privileged awake at night. Today's topic, the SOS proposed $18 fee for travelers without a real ID. That's right, folks, 18 whole dollars. Almost enough to buy two airport sandwiches or one artisanal latte with a side of existential dread. Now, this isn't just any fee, it's an $18 ticket to a futuristic biometric kiosk experience. You know, because nothing screams security like having your eyeballs scanned while you stand barefoot, holding your belt and dignity in one hand and a half-empty water bottle in the other. But here's the kicker. Paying doesn't guarantee you'll breeze through security. Nope, you might still face additional screening or delays. It's like buying concert tickets only to find out you have to sing karaoke in front of everyone before you're allowed inside. And let's take a moment to appreciate that this is all part of complying with legislation passed, wait for it, in 2005. Yes, it's taken nearly two decades for us to reach this pinnacle of bureaucratic efficiency. The government moves faster than your grandma on dial-up internet during peak hours. Of course, passports are still valid IDs. Because who doesn't love lugging around an extra booklet just to prove they're not on some secret watch list? And remember, if you don't want to pay the fee, there's always the option of getting a real ID. It's like upgrading from regular coffee to decaf. Equally unsatisfying, but somehow necessary. So next time you're at the airport lamenting over which line will move slower, the one with toddlers or the one with tech enthusiasts trying out their new biometric toy, remember, this is what progress looks like in our first world bubble. Join us next time when we discuss another pressing issue. Why can't my smart fridge order oat milk without sending me push notifications about my cholesterol levels? Until then, stay inconvenienced.
In today's Daily Dose of Dystopia, we bring you the latest chapter in our cultural obsession with watching teenagers battle to the death for our entertainment. Yes, folks, it's time to dust off your Mockingjay pins and prepare for another round of the Hunger Games, as Lionsgate teases us with a prequel promising more blood-soaked drama than ever before. Sunrise on the Reaping, slated for release in 2026, takes us back to a simpler time, 24 years before Katniss Everdeen's arrow pierced our hearts and minds, to explore the origins of Haymitch Abernathy. Because nothing says feel-good cinema like discovering how a beloved character became a broken shell of his former self after surviving a murder marathon. Joseph Zadeh steps into the shoes once filled by Woody Harrelson, bringing youthful vigor to Haymitch's character as he navigates the chaos of the 50th Hunger Games, or as it's affectionately known among dystopian enthusiasts, the Second Quarter Quell. Expect intense action from frame one, because why waste time on plot development when you can jump straight into carnage? The film boasts an ensemble cast that reads like a who's who of young Hollywood royalty: Whitney Peak, McKenna Grace, Jesse Plemons, and some seasoned veterans like Glenn Close and Billy Porter. And let's not forget Ralph Fiennes stepping into Donald Sutherland's shoes as President Snow. After all, every good dystopia needs its calculating tyrant. Directed by Francis Lawrence and based on Suzanne Collins' best-selling series, this franchise has proven that there's no limit to how much suffering audiences are willing to endure in exchange for cinematic thrills. So mark your calendars for November 20th, 2026, a date when we'll all gather again in darkened theaters to cheer on fictional children fighting for survival while ignoring the real-world parallels that loom ever larger outside. In conclusion, long live Panem! May its tribute games continue indefinitely until we've fully embraced our descent into madness, or at least until we've squeezed every last dollar out of it.
Welcome, fellow travelers of the cosmic absurdity, to another episode of the Existential Crisis Hour. Today, we find ourselves in a curious pickle jar of economic rhetoric, courtesy of Vice President J.D. Vance. In a world where eggs have become the new gold standard for economic health, Vance has asked us to exercise patience as we await an economic boom. Because nothing says progress quite like waiting. In this grand theater of existence, our protagonist Donald Trump continues to insist that everything is just peachy keen. Meanwhile, his trusty sidekick Vance acknowledges that Americans are feeling the pinch, especially when it comes to those pesky grocery prices. Imagine the existential dread of standing in a supermarket aisle, contemplating whether you can afford this week's dozen eggs or if it's time to embrace a life without omelets. But fear not. The White House assures us they're working tirelessly on initiatives to make life more affordable. It's almost poetic how they've managed to transform affordability into a buzzword, a new linguistic marvel birthed from necessity and desperation. Who knew that living within one's means could be so avant-garde? As we ponder these weighty matters from our armchairs, or perhaps while standing in line at Walmart, we must ask ourselves, is there meaning in the madness? Are we merely puppets dancing on strings pulled by unseen forces? Or are we just trying to figure out how many frozen pizzas we can fit into our budget this month? Vance has also blamed former President Joe Biden for putting us in this economic quagmire. It seems we're all stuck in a Sisyphean cycle where each administration blames its predecessor for pushing the boulder up the hill only for it to roll back down again. Perhaps that's why they call it the economy, a never-ending loop where hope springs eternal but reality often falls short. And yet, amidst the chaos and confusion, there's a glimmer of hope. Or maybe it's just gaslighting, as Trump touts falling gasoline prices and stock market highs as evidence of success. Because when you're lost at sea without a compass or map, sometimes all you need is someone shouting from the crow's nest that land is just over yonder horizon. So grab your popcorn, if you can afford it, and watch as our leaders navigate these turbulent waters with promises of checks and tariffs rolled back like magic carpets unfurling before our eyes. Will they deliver us unto prosperity? Or will we continue wandering through this existential desert, searching for answers among mirages? In any case, dear listeners, remember, life may be absurd, but laughter is free, even if eggs aren't anymore.
In the fevered haze of capitalism's relentless pursuit, Frida Kahlo's self-portrait shatters a record, selling for an obscene $54.7 million. This is not merely a transaction, but a spectacle. A gaudy parade of wealth that reduces art to currency and suffering to spectacle. A painting born from pain and confinement now paraded as a trophy in the gilded halls of Sotheby's, where human experience is appraised like livestock at market. Kahlo, confined by her own broken body, painted from the prison of her bed, a motif that echoes through her work like a haunting refrain. The irony is rich. What was once an expression of personal torment is now fodder for the insatiable appetite of those who see value only in dollar signs. The bed she lay upon becomes not just a symbol of her struggle, but also an altar at which society worships its true god, profit. as this piece floats across continents. From London to Abu Dhabi, Hong Kong to Paris, it serves as both relic and commodity. Its journey around the globe mirrors the ceaseless march of capital, seeking always new markets to conquer and new souls to commodify. Frida's intimate world displayed in public arenas, inviting lines out the door. Not pilgrims seeking spiritual connection, but consumers eager for their slice of cultural cachet. The narrative spun by Sotheby's head of Latin American art speaks volumes about our collective delusion, a mythos crafted around art as investment rather than expression. Kahlo's deeply personal work becomes universal only when it resonates with wallets rather than hearts. This auction was part of Exquisite Corpus, a collection where surrealist visions are dissected and sold off piecemeal like butchered meat on display. Rene Magritte here, Salvador Dali there, all reduced to mere commodities in this grand bazaar, each piece another symptom in this fever dream where reality distorts under the weight of unchecked greed. Here lies Frida Kahlo, not dead but entombed within layers of financial aspiration and societal collapse. Her reason for living transformed into yet another cog in capitalism's monstrous machine, a reminder that even our most sacred expressions are never safe from being swallowed whole by its ravenous maw.